Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Nerd Watch podcast. We are here, third day of the amazing Hawaii Comic Con. Myself, G-Money, I'm also joined by one of the partners of Nerd Watch, Gannon. He's in the house as well. We are joined by an absolute legend in the business, at least for us. He may think differently, but we think of him as a legend. He basically crafted some of our childhoods. Ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to have on the show Chris Claremont in our booth today. Sir, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Well, Chris, just because I have an audience of a lot of people, for those that may not know, sir, would you please let them know who you are and why? To me and to Gannon,
if we have to tell people who Chris Claremont is on something called Nerd Watch,
well, just,
something's wrong.
Just because I want to make sure, what it that makes you such a legend to us?
Well, in its bluntest technical terms,
yes, sir.
I wrote the X-Men for more years than anyone cares to count, 17 in a stretch, the first stretch, and basically the films are all my fault.
And you have crafted more X-Men themselves. You have created more X-Men as well. Is that correct?
More than what?
More. Well, in the universe, you are responsible for the majority of the characters, yes?
Yeah, that we all know.
Yeah. Now,
it was a dirty job, but as the saying goes, someone had to do it.
Someone had to do it. Now, Chris, for you, let's get a little backstory on your life in comic books and in the arts. We've only got
them for like 10 or so minutes.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Well,
I conquered.
That's right. For you, when was being an artist something that happened when you were a youth, or was it something that happened later in life?
A man has to know his limitations. An artist, I am not. Writer, yes. Artist, no.
Right, right. Well, as a writer, was this something you found out when you were younger, or was this something that you found out that you were good at when you became older? I've run into a lot of creators here that found themselves doing it when they were really young, or getting into it when they were in their like late 20s. So it kind of runs the gamut that they find their talent and they like it.
Well, for me, I mean, my original major in university was political theory. My secondary major, which became my primary major as time wore on, was acting.
Right.
I never really thought about writing.
Right.
I like to think I was a fairly good actor. That was my ambition, was to make it my career.
Sure.
It just that... You know, someone asked me what I used to... I always get asked what I think of, you know, writing. And I said, well, what do you think of breathing?
Huh.
And they'd look at confused. I said, look, you don't think about breathing, but it's absolutely essential to survival.
Sure.
For me, that's writing. I don't think of it as a pleasure or as a joy. It is... a natural part of who I am as a person. I do it. Like I breathe. It's necessary for survival. The surprise and the delight, I guess, is that I've turned out to be good at it.
Not only good at it, at least for the two men sitting at this table right now, and probably everybody that's part of this booth think you're great at it. When you fantasized about what you would be writing, would you ever think in your wildest dreams that you would be responsible for writing probably one of the greatest superhero teams of all time? Or was this what you wanted to write about? Were there other things other than, say, comic books that you wanted to write about?
Well, I wrote stories. I wrote short stories. Like every kid, I fantasized about writing screenplays.
Sure.
Comic books was something I stumbled into.
Right.
The X-Men was something I jumped into when the opportunity arose, primarily for the chance to work with Dave Cockrum.
Oh, very cool.
And to work on these characters that he had just created.
Right.
In Giant Size X-Men number one, Storm, Nightcrawler, Wolverine, well, not so much Wolverine, but Colossus. I mean, these were wonderful, original for me, fascinating characters. I wanted to learn more about them.
Right, right. So when you're pitched this, are you all of a sudden going, this sounds amazing?
I wasn't pitched it.
Oh, you weren't pitched. Okay.
Len Wein was he was editor-in-chief of Marvel. I was associate editor, which meant he was number one, I was number two.
Right.
He and Dave were working on Giant Size number one.
Right.
My office, well, my desk, we didn't have offices. Len had an office. And foolishly, he kept not shutting the door, so I kept sneaking in while he and Dave were plotting the story.
Right.
Because it sounded like a cool story and really cool characters, and Dave was one of the best artists in the comic book business and certainly one of the best character creators ever.
Right, right.
And it just sounded really, really cool, and I had the social skills of a newt. I just wanted in. And when Len decided he could not write the series,
right,
and was about to offer it up to whomever wanted it, I just didn't give him the chance. I just kicked in the door and jumped on him and said, I want it.
So you were the one that was like, I'm taking this.
Well, he was giving it up, and I was, fine, if you're giving it up, I'll write it.
Fantastic. Well, listen...
To get rid of me, he said, oh.
Well, joining us on the podcast as well as Alika, if there's someone who's...
I don't mean to butt in every so often, but just worship you. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay. I was just about to warn you about Alika. He owns Maui Comics and Collectibles, and there's an altar of your image at his shop that he prays to.
Come on, Gene.
It's like an alter ego, an alter image.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a picture of Chris Claremont with hair, and he's good looking. And oddly enough, because he's a picture, he shuts up.
I like the fact that you talk so much. These stories are amazing.
Yeah.
Paid by the word.
Yeah.
I hope you're paying me.
I know. I'm paying attention.
It's a metaphor.
Yeah. So, Mr. Claremont, here, another question for you. How do you maintain such a wild imagination with these characters? I mean, your brain must
not
work.
Not just with those characters.
I mean, well, you must work them. Your brain must work.
Your other book. What is the name of that book that the medieval themed Merida or
Murata?
Murata.
Jim Shooter's mother came up with the name.
Was it like a play on Marauder?
No, it was just. It was the evolution of a pre-existing concept that John Bolton and I were working on that Marvel lost the license to, and we basically, I felt, we'd done this brilliant original story, visually brilliant, certainly.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I flipped through his book,
I didn't want it to just shrivel, so we went to Jim, and before I could say, we'd like to buy it back. He said, how about we just sell it to you? You guys can do it as your own.
You're just there at the right time, it seems.
Well, and Jim was in a remarkably ethical and decent mood.
As opposed to... No, I'm just
different, it's just the right... Being in the right place at the right time with the right attitude on all the parties involved. I mean, Archie Goodwin as editor of Epic wanted the series. John Bolton and I wanted to find a way to get it out.
I ended up publishing that, by the way.
Marvel did.
That was a Marvel? Oh, yeah. Okay. That was Epic.
No, it was one of the major events of the first year of Epic Illustrated.
Which was 88? That late? Really?
Might have been. Maybe it was earlier. I'd have to go back. It's been a while. But the whole idea was Marvel wanted to create a publishing venue for creator-owned, non-code, non-superhero.
Interesting.
Well, I hope you're not offended by the comparison, but a lot of people drew a parallel between that and heavy metal, an anthology
I don't think that's unjustified. The difference, I think, was that Epic was meant to be geared towards an American audience as opposed to a European audience, and to appeal to present
less
American
sex.
No, not less sex. Less, but the American style of storytelling is different from the European style.
Sure, gotcha. Yeah.
I did a series. Started a series for a European publisher that called Wanderers, which was part of...
Okay, geez. Somebody just introduced me to that the other day. There's an artist, Theo Lee, locally, and he does prints of different Marvel... And he points out these characters. I'm like, who are these guys? He's like, oh, these are the Wanderers. I was like, who? I've never heard of them before until last week.
It was, it was set in the 800s.
Okay,
I think he may have a different Wanderers than me.
Okay, yeah. I think it was a hero-based Wanderers that he had shown me.
No, okay. Basically it's a clutch of young early medieval post-fall of the Empire characters. It's derived from the continuity of a series that John and I worked on, did, called The Black Dragon.
John Bolton.
Yes. And the idea was that why I liked the end of the 7th century, beginning of the 8th century, 9th century, that point in time.
Sure.
The Roman Empire had just fallen. Islam had not come into existence yet. Muhammad was still...
It's an interesting time that still affects everything.
Well, everything was up for grabs.
Right.
The Roman Empire had just fallen. China was in a last great resurgence for 1,000 years. It was a point of flux. And for me, that was the ideal setting for what I had to set in mind. And the premise of it was... It is the immediate aftermath of the death of Arthur.
King Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Except maybe not.
We don't know if he's dead.
Oh,
well, that's
okay.
It's ambiguous.
That's what we set up at the beginning.
Okay.
That's what you find out in the first volume.
Right.
And this sends our heroes on a quest that will take them around the world at a point in time where in the concept of the series... The old gods and the new gods are in conflict. The manifestations.
We're good. We can still hear you.
Sorry. No, it's not your fault at all. Because
we're in a Comic Con, by the way, folks. So if you can't tell with the announcements in the background.
Yeah. For real? Yeah, it's just fine because we can
overtalk Jim.
Boy, was he pissed!
Did he say something?
No, but he wasn't pleased about it. So, but I can actually still hear you on the microphone. So
this is where the virtue of cutting comes in.
Yes, it does.
Oh wait, we're live. Oh no! Let's flush it.
Heck
no! There are more Rins running around.
Those cosplays are so adorable, man.
Well, no, but they look really cool.
That's on the main stage. Oh my gosh, I tell you.
And the Rhaegar.
Thor's character that actually looks attractive.
Oh no! That's not the kind I want to see in movies.
For sure.
Well,
for sure.
Originally, Luke was supposed to be a girl.
If
Rin is the contemporary evolution of what Luke should have been back in the day, who knows?
Man, don't get us started on Star Wars.
No, sorry.
I know. Yeah.
So let's get back to the Wanderers.
No, so the idea.
We fought it enough about
it. But the idea was that this picks up.
And so wait,
20 years
this
after.
Is the Wanderers, and it was published right by
the first volume was published in Europe.
By Soleil. Soleil has an American branch, don't they?
Well, the goal was the three volumes would come out in Europe, and then because I held the North American rights,
I would
find a publisher, and we publish it over here as a graphic novel.
Okay,
put all three volumes together.
Wow,
and see how. And the idea was, it would go on. And what happened was the first issue did not sell did not meet the projections or the hopes of the publisher.
Sure.
The second issue was penciled and inked, but they decided to scrap the project, and it was a partnership between Panini and Soleil, and they didn't get along.
Right.
And they split apart, so the rights were actually held by Panini. And Panini just didn't know what they wanted to do with it. So it's been sitting in a drawer there for 10 years now.
Oh, my gosh.
But the annoying thing was the third issue was scripted as a full script.
As a movie script.
But the artist was hired by Marvel.
Oh.
And stopped working on Wanderers and went west.
Wow.
Does that happen a lot with, like, artists or writers get taken up by different projects while you're in the middle of something?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, there must be so many things on the table from Chris Claremont that we haven't seen yet.
You have
actually they're all on my table. Here.
Can we go finish them off for you?
There's a Michael Golden project that's been sitting in the drawer since 1987.
Goodness
gracious!
Are any of these licensed properties?
Well, the Michael Golden was originally a Superman story that
I got special
permission from Marvel to write.
Wow.
It was going to be my one and only Superman.
Oh,
little did
man.
I know.
But
Chris Claremont, could you imagine that?
I can't even.
I've got 12 pages of really gorgeous art.
Can we buy them?
No. Well, they're just Xeroxes. No, the ambition actually is Michael and I've... the story is—it's still a good story, and so you know, just Man of Steel and do it as our own.
Are you able to divulge any details of that, or is it something that still might happen?
Oh no, come over to the table and take a look at it.
Oh, okay. Fantastic!
And you can draw your own conclusions.
Well,
basically,
yeah.
You got aliens. You got Australia. You got the hero. The hero's old girlfriend.
Yes.
From college. attempted murder. Interplanetary genocide. And the potential for an ongoing series.
All right, folks, the time is now
for sure. Well, listen,
on the main stage, we're going to have a voice actor round table.
your wife just showed up, and thank you very much for letting us have him. For
well, there's also... usually with a pencil. Pencils are how you draw for kids.
Crayons sometimes.
No, pencils. Crayons are just...
I'm not cutting this interview. This is great the way it is.
But, there's a story that... another French artist and I were doing that was for heavy metal, and they then went bankrupt in mid production, having paid me but not him. So,
out of curiosity, who is the artist?
Out of curiosity, you'll have to ask me when we get there.
So No problem.
Set in the turn of the 20th century. 1899, and aliens, terrestrials, tumult in outer space, giant whales on a planet. And
is this still the Superman script?
Oh,
this is
not
totally
see,
whatever for heavy metal.
He's already sold me, so wherever I can get this.
I know, for real. You should just do a book of unfinished scripts.
Well, no, the problem is, John Bolton and I had talked about doing a fourth Murata.
Oh, wow.
The problem is that to do it right, it would run about 96 pages.
Right.
Which means we would probably need an advance of somewhere between 100 and 150K.
Wow.
And publishers just...
That's why everything is licensed properties nowadays, because nobody's willing to risk anything.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
And you know, why should... I mean,
the
attitude at Marvel is, why should we publish, Epic, or even, a creator-owned series?
Sure.
Why should we pay for it? when we can publish one of our own series
right.
and license that for
yeah,
a movie
and
rake in all the bucks.
Rake in all the dough.
But that, I mean, this is how John Romita Jr. and Mark Millar, I think, did Kickstarter.
Yeah, yeah.
That was done through, not, it wasn't Epic, it was, can't remember what Marvel's creator or title was about 5 years ago, 8 years ago. But they did it there, almost, I think, on spec, and then but sold it as a film. And they got two movies out of it. So.
I think if Chris Claremont decided to kickstart something, I guarantee it would get funded.
Oh, Jesus. In the first day.
I would guarantee that.
You know, this is a conversation you should have with my wife who runs the business.
Well, I mean, it's the shape of things now, and crowdfunding is a very legitimate source,
well, yeah,
especially
but,
for a large name like Chris Claremont.
Well, the problem is always then you have to convince the artist
to hang around for
a year. To draw it.
Sure,
I mean, that's
yeah.
the thing. It's
sure.
it's what used to happen is, I mean, back in the day, Bantam Books offered a 3-book deal for graphic novels where they were willing to pay $90,000 a volume. So
jeez.
The idea was 30 for the writer, 60 for the artist. So 100 pages at $600 a page. That's not a bad.
It's fairly
we're
decent.
Talking $1990.
Sure.
So this is decent money.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find any artists to take it.
Wow.
Because they could earn as much or more from Marvel.
Wow.
For doing covers.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I pitched one artist, and the next thing I knew, he called the company and said, "If you're looking for work, I can write and draw my own stuff." And you want to, you know, I said, oh, God, you know, that's not fair.
But
that's why I'm writing, when I say I'm writing a novel, it has the virtue of the only person I get to yell at is me.
So your voice is going nowhere because your mind works a mile a minute. You're more imaginative than most people that are in this room right now. And I guess my question.
Well, you know, this is where you sit back and think, it's all timing. I sent a novel pitch, chapters and outlines, to Ace Books back in the day, and I got rejected. Why did he get rejected? Well, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but Stephen King's about to come out with a novel which is remarkably similar
to
yours.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
And I said, God darn it, what? Stephen King, you
that's a hard name to go up against, but I want to say that
bear
Chris
in mind,
Claremont
this is in 1983 when
he's
hot like fire,
monster,
right?
Yeah.
Well, but you know,
but Chris Claremont's coming off of the
not
X-Men, then. Right?
well,
you, I mean,
I was still in the yeah, but
maybe not. The X-Men weren't proven by the mid '80s then.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but you know,
by the '90s,
it's Stephen King, and you don't want to get involved in people yelling at you.
For sure.
And it was like, you know, God, Stephen, you couldn't do something else this month?
I mean, I want to do a murdering car.
No,
I'm just kidding.
So, to quote Rosanna, it's always something.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know you're short on time. I know you want to get out of here. I do have one last question for you. It's kind of a tough question, but you're a legend for us, and you're a legend in this business, and everybody knows it. My question is for you as an art, for as a writer, and having so much material that you do have. Are you okay with being defined by your work with the X-Men? I mean, if that's
because
the case,
defined
like
the, by a comic that at its peak had a sale of 7.8 million copies,
world record.
Yes, yes.
Gee, I don't know. A concept
like
that spawned nine major films.
Yeah,
soon to be 10, and possibly 11 next year if they do Mr. Sinister and maybe Dark Phoenix.
And Brian Cranston wants to be Mr. Sinister.
Well, I know that some.
You shitting me?
Yeah, he's made that plea like almost last year.
Oh, baby,
breaking in the box.
I wonder if I should tell him that Mr. Sinister is really a 12-year-old kid.
Is that really how the
my concept of him? Yeah.
What?
No.
I like that.
My concept of Sinister is he's Scott's friend from the orphanage.
Wow.
What
but he's,
the heck?
I love that.
Right now, and don't tell anybody. and then get your ass up and because you have.
Yeah, see, we're getting yelled at.
Oh man, we're about to get the dirt.
We're trying to get him out of here. I promise.
We're getting scolding.
We're trying to get him out of here.
No, my
stand up. Stand up.
2 minutes, I'm done. My concept of him is he's a 12-year-old kid, but his lifespan is over 1,000 years, so he ages proportionately. So, yes, he's 180 years old.
I see. Oh, okay.
But he only looks like a 12-year-old.
Okay.
That is amazing.
Which is why he's designed sinister, because no
Chris,
self-respect.
They're taping off an area for your
okay.
They're spreading like the plague, okay? They literally have masking tape.
Serves them right.
They're making a box of
four. Do not exceed
I'll
this
talk
boundary.
Quickly.
Okay, go ahead.
So what
remember,
was I
happy wife, happy life, folks.
Yeah. But the whole idea was that no.
She's taking
he has to go now.
I know.
Because okay. He has a line.
To be continued.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Mr. Chris Claremont,
amazing.
Thank you so much, sir.
We
I appreciate
you.
It very
thank
much.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you so
it's
much.
It's such an honor.
It's been an absolute honor.
I have to email Brian Cranston and tell him, oh, man.
Yeah, Brian will love that email.
That, of course, was Chris Claremont, right. An unbelievable legend in the business. We were so happy to have him on the show, and he's a wonderful, wonderful gentleman, scholar, smart man, and absolutely brilliant.
So what's so great about him again?
There's a line, apparently, that's waiting for him to get
there's
to.
There's a line for us, too, though.
I know, that's true.
Don't you see me on the banner?
Yeah, yes, I do see you on the banner. Chris Claremont is absolutely wonderful. His wife was in studio.
I think she hates us now, though.
She does. She totally hates us. Hey, listen, we told him he had to go. We just had one more question for him. But
hey, it's not our fault, but she still hates us.
Hey, she does. So, big thank you to Chris Claremont for being part of the program today. I could have listened to him talk for the next hour, I should say. It was a lot of fun. Sorry, by the way, I didn't mean for Alika to hijack your segment on the show, but that's exactly what he did.
Wait, what? What happened?
Alika.
Oh.
He hijacked you a little
that's
bit.
That's okay.
Were you okay with it?
All yeah, right, cool. Totally fine.
Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, that was Chris Claremont. We got more interviews coming up right here on the Nerdwatch podcast, happening right here live at the amazing Hawaii Comic Con. So stay tuned. More interviews coming up. More podcasts coming out right here. So until then, aloha.